I'm Christina.
And this is Erin.
And you're listening to
Something to Wag About.
So welcome back, everyone. We're doing this fun little mini episode because when I was editing our last podcast, I had a lot of frustrated moments when I was running into things that we said that we totally could have dived further into, some topics that I'm quite passionate about and I wanted to speak a little more to. So I wanted to pick Christina's brain today on some of those things. And the first one was, we had been talking about a client that you worked with and a lovely little dog that you said when he, I don't remember if it was when he was frustrated or a little overwhelmed, but he would run off and go lay in his tunnel, which I think is super cute, by the way. And I really liked and appreciated that you said you guys were working on transitioning that to go lie on a bed rather than saying that you were trying to stop that behavior altogether. So it wasn't about making it so he didn't run off. It was about teaching him a better place to go lie down if he felt like he was a little overwhelmed or stressed. And I just want to talk, I wanted to jump a little further into that.
Sure.
Yeah.
So in, that's an agility dog. And in agility, in some circles, in the past, not so much now, but in the past anyways, it used to be a common thing where people say, well, he has to do his work. And it was about making the dog do a task we wanted them to do in order to then earn a reward, and then they also would earn a break or a crate time or something else, instead of realizing that when the dog leaves work, that's not a problem with the dog's work ethic, that's not a problem with the dog, that's actually a problem with the training that's being applied to that dog, whether the training skills are too hard or the reinforcement schedule or reinforcement method isn't appropriate for that dog, or something's going on for that dog that's saying the way we're training them isn't working, and they're communicating that. So instead of, it's taking responsibility for the training rather than blaming the dog.
Right. And I remember we've talked about this before, and I'm really curious about your circle of training friends, because I know you've said before it was more of a thing of the past, but I still see it a lot. I see people who want to prevent their dog from, essentially it's an opt-out, right? They're opting out because, like you say, it's something with our training that is putting a lot of pressure on them, and they're just wandering off because that's what they're choosing to do. They're walking away, which is a wonderful decision in my mind, rather than screaming at me or something else. But I still see it a lot. I see people closing crates so the dog can't go into the crate if they choose to, or getting frustrated at the dog or something like that. So we still are putting some blame on the dog. And that is something that I do point out to people a lot. And I think it's wonderful when our dogs give us that information that we need to step back and look at our training plan, because it's something we are doing that's causing that frustration, pressure, whatever it may be, and not necessarily the dog being, I don't know, disobedient, for lack of a better word.
I think what people, the shift in dogs that has been a big part of the last, I don't know, 15 years maybe, is that we look at the dogs a little bit more as willing partners in sports versus a tool that we use to do the sport. And not everybody's there. For a lot of people, dogs still are tools to do the sport rather than a willing partner that we're supposed to make this fun for. One example, I remember the exact moment. I can picture myself standing there, click, click, click. My brain just processing what was happening when the time that had actually went through for me, like that I clued in about this type of training. And it was with Maxie, back when I did agility with her. So I don't know, 10 years ago. And that was the idea. It was a fun match, I think. And there are other dogs around, but no other dogs were out. And she's a pretty sensitive soul. And she ran into her crate. So we hauled her back out and did the sequence again. And then she tried to go back in her crate, but the person running it stood in front of it and wouldn't let her. And then there was a discussion and we closed the crate saying, hey, that's not a fun place for you to be. Let's come out here and have fun. It wasn't meant like an or else or anything, but it was saying, hey, that's not what I want you to do right now. I want you to do this. And then we did a couple more obstacles and Max stopped, looked at me and just left. She just left. She went off, left the ring, went into the woods and left. And I was standing there, and this is the point where I was standing there going, what just happened? When I realized my dog wasn't saying, I won't do this. My dog wasn't saying, I don't want to do this. My dog was saying, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And if our dogs tell us, I can't do this, we have to listen, even if we think it's something they should do or should be able to do. And, you know, that dogs might, Enzo would be a spin and bark at me. A lot of dogs will nip at their handlers. Pet dogs often will jump up and mouth or hump somebody. They'll tell us when they can't do something. And if we don't listen, they have no choice but to escalate their behavior.
Exactly. I love it. Yeah, you worded that beautifully. it can manifest, like come out in so many different ways, and you covered a lot of them. But yeah, that's just, I wanted to dive into that because I do think it is an important point. And I know you've been around in the dog training world longer than I have been. So you're probably seeing the shift happening because change happens slowly, right? So, you know, going back 15 or 20 years, I can imagine that the shift is happening, that people are wanting dogs to be the willing participant. Where I've been in sports for probably only about 5 years or so now. So not a lot of change for me has happened in that time. And some people I still work with do still have that mentality of getting frustrated rather than getting curious about and listening to their dog. So I wanted to mention that. I thought that was a wonderful point to dive into. The other thing that came up in our discussion that I actually wanted to ask you more about was, we had been talking about arousal control, which I love. It's one of my favorite topics. And we talked about different behaviors we can do to help our dogs develop this arousal control. So bringing arousal up. And then we talked about still behaviors to help them learn that they can still focus even when they have a lot of arousal. And what came out of that was, I was talking about, it's great to train new behaviors. And I said, for each dog, you know, we have to look at the dog and choose skills that are best for that specific personality and individual. And you had mentioned that for Riker, you liked having him, say, jump into your arms versus Enzo, where maybe you would do a chin rest. And I thought that was fantastic. And I'm curious as to how you choose what behaviors you might be asking of a dog, because a chin rest and a jump in arms are quite different.
Yes. Well, Riker is a fidgety little fellow, as you know. When he's anxious, that often comes out as movement. And down is hard. So he's the stereotypical little dog that does the little dance when it's dinner time. Right? He dances and pats his feet and he moves backwards and he moves forward and he runs to his crate and then he looks at me and he dances his feet. You know, he does that. That's kind of his go-to move when he's excited. And when he's overwhelmed, Riker can get zoomies. That's one of his stress responses. Again, movement-based. And if he's really overwhelmed, Riker will leave. He will bolt. And when he gets like that, and again, that's not me doing any sport training or something. That would be, you know, a strange dog shows up where he's not expecting it and the dog startles him, he will leave. He used to leave and go back to the car when I was hiking. He just runs, and that wasn't safe. So he's actually started hiking with us as a group again, because we've managed to help him with his anxiety and help him with his skills. So he actually enjoys group hikes, even if there's a bunch of big dogs there. So his stress responses are motion based. And this is a good question, because I hadn't really thought about it before. So for me, asking him to jump into my arms helps him be calm in a way that he can do and in a way that he's safe. So it helps him be still in a way where he's safe. He's in my arms. He's not going to bolt. He's not going to get zoomies and run into another dog or out into traffic. And he likes being in my arms. He feels safe there. So that's kind of where it went with him. With Enzo, Enzo's arousal comes out as stillness. He stalks things. So he's the stereotypical border collie. When you say sit and his back legs don't quite work, his eyes bulge out and his bum slowly starts moving towards the ground and he gets kind of stuck. And if he's standing there too long, his bum starts coming back up. So it's easy for him to do a still behavior. It's not easy for him to use his back legs, but it is easy for him to press his chin down into my hand. That makes sense for him. So it's when he's over threshold, when your dog is going to go over threshold and we're trying to find, so this, I'm going into the reactivity training rather than more than what we were talking about last podcast. Like, so for instance, if I see an animal and they're one of their triggers is there and they're about to go over threshold, I like to have a skill that I can ask them to do that gives them a healthy, appropriate focus, ideally towards me, that's going to interrupt that reactivity in a non-invasive way. And so, not that Enzo's reactive, but for a dog like him, I might use a chin rest and then I control where his face is pointing. Right? For a dog like Riker, jump into my arms. So if we can do that, then the next step might be something a little bit less. So if Riker can jump into my arms, then that lowers his arousal or gets him thinking and concentrating. Then I might put him down and ask him for a down. Because a down is a still behavior he could do, but it's not as easy as jumping into my arms. And it's not as safe for him because he's a little guy. I might have gone off on a segue here. Am I answering your question?
No. I think that's lovely. And, you know, I actually like that you bring in the difference between reactivity and when we don't have a reactive dog, but we're still trying to work through arousal. So like Enzo, who, and I have some clients that are quite similar to Enzo, who get that typical stocky brain. Yeah. Fantastic. Really lovely dog. But we're wanting to be at a starting point when we're working through these, because arousal is a hard thing to work through. You know, it's a hard thing for dogs to keep that thoughtful state of mind when their nervous system is just, you know, really heightened, right? So we want to be choosing behaviors that for that individual dog, they're going to be successful. And we certainly can grow on that once they are successful with that easier behavior, but we got to start where it is going to, you know, we're increasing our chances of success. And I like that you mentioned the reactivity, because that it is, I approach that very differently. And it is really going to depend on the type of reactivity that dog is facing. So like for my border collie, Vilya, who is reactive, with her arousal at this point, a chin rest would be really hard for her, because for her anxiety, if she can't look at the thing at all, her arousal and her stress level, like I can see her, it goes through the roof. So for her, I am actually currently working on something new, which is contact healing. So I want her to be able to do a still behavior, and that's press into me, but she can still actually look around. And it's very helpful for her to stay calm if she can keep her eye on things. And she actually is better at then looking away if she kind of knows where that thing is and she knows it's not going to come up. She has a really hard time with things approaching behind her. You know, we're working on it, but at this point in time, if she doesn't know that there's not something approaching behind her, she gets really stressed out. Mm-hmm. So for her, I choose behaviors that still allow her to look around. If I need to do something for her to interrupt reactivity, I do hand touches with her. She's not going to redirect on me, so I'm not worried about that. And the hand touch refocuses her. It's movement, which is helpful for her as well. But then it also allows her to, if she feels the need to, and she's getting better now at not having to turn and look. But after doing that hand touch, she can look back if she needs to make sure that scary thing isn't coming up behind her butt. It's a very interesting, and it's so different for each dog and what's driving their reactivity. Yeah.
I have a couple more things to add. If you check out my website, www.positive.dog, I have a free resource that's on arousal modulation on there that you can just download, a little thing I wrote out on how to build that kind of ladder of lowering and increasing arousal. And the other thing to think about is that when we're training arousal modulation, we don't need to go to the extremes. We don't want to be sitting our dogs up to get over aroused. We want to do most of our training in places where their brain's still working to teach them how to get excited and how to calm down. But real life happens. Like the whole idea that we can train dogs, especially sport dogs or reactive dogs, without them ever going over a threshold. Like if you listen to some of the TikTok stuff, like you should never let your dog go over threshold. Well, that's just not real life.
Yeah.
Like if you're never going over threshold and you have a high arousal dog, you're probably going to get like stuck in the safety zone. And no, we shouldn't be going over threshold all the time. That's not great training either, but it happens. It's life. And then we need tools to get out of trouble. So that's where a lot of this comes into.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Good.
Do you have anything else you want to mention? This was supposed to be a mini episode. I don't know how many.
Yeah. No, I'm good. Anything else you want to add?
Nope. That was it.
All right.